Okay, so welcome everybody to our third call of the Think Pink and Grow Rich coaching program. This is Nancy Roberts, and I'm going to be leading the call tonight. And if you've seen any of the emails about the call or downloaded the form to take notes, you'll see that the call is about something called your financial blueprint. And so the reason I do this call rather than Chris is because financial blueprint is something I'm extremely passionate about. We tend to break up these topics by which one of us is most passionate about it, and there's a couple we share because we fight over it too much. But financial blueprint is something I learned about probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even more than this, maybe more like 7 or 8, and I'm just aging myself. But when I learned it, it explained so much to me about the financial challenges that I had had in my life. And it was kind of like one of those light bulbs that went off as I learned about it. And it helped me eventually solve the financial challenges that I was having, and therefore I became so passionate about teaching it to others. So I will explain what a financial blueprint is, but I want to give you a little bit of my background just so you can understand why when I learned about this topic and what it was so profound for me. So you may know a little bit of my story because I've told it before, but back in 2002, I started my own business, my own corporate consulting business. And prior to that, I had held positions around $35,000 a year, and that was actually good for me back then because that was probably at that point even more than I thought I'd be able to make because I only had a high school education. So when I lost my job in 2002, it was like my dream job, I decided to start my own consulting business. And because I had been doing some work with corporations, like some training, team building, communication training, that kind of thing, I went into business for myself thinking I'd be able to just, hang up a sign and get clients. Well, I had never learned how to sell my services. When I worked for a consulting company, they brought the business to me. They brought the clients to me, and I just went and delivered the work. So it was sort of a rude awakening that all of a sudden, here I am in business, but I don't know how to sell my own services. Add to that that I was fearful to promote myself, fearful to pick up the phone and call my clients or my prospects, and you can kind of see where there was a perfect storm for a bad business. So about 5 years into my business, I had lived on credit cards when cash flow was tight. So by 5 years into my business, around 2005, so that's about 3 years into my business, I had racked up $60,000 in debt. I was, charging my groceries and my gas in order to have cash to pay my rent. I was robbing, as they say, Peter to pay for Paul. And within a few, few short years, I was over $60,000 in debt. And I had no consistent income coming in. I mean, some months I would make $2,000, the next month I'd make $700. So, I mean, it was really just scraping by. And it was around that time that I read this book called The Secret. Well, first I read Think and Grow Rich, which was a downloadable ebook that we gave you as a bonus to this program. So if you haven't read that book yet, after this call, you may want to. Because I read that book, and the first thing that kind of jumped out at me was they talk about in order to be wealthy, and this means wealthy in any area of your life, not just finances, but I was, of course, applying it to finances given where I was at. It said that you need to have the desire and the belief. So the desire for money and the belief that you can attain it. Well, I didn't have either of those because I had been raised in a very religious, very conservative household and taught that money was the root of all evil or money in some way was bad and that it would corrupt you. And that message was imprinted many different ways for me. So I didn't desire money. I actually thought there was something wrong with having money. And, of course, I didn't have the belief that I could have money anyways. So then I read another book called that book got me started. Then I was curious, okay, what is it about this money thing and why do I struggle so much with it? I knew I was a good consultant. I was a behavioral analyst. I knew I was good at what I did, but I just struggled around the finances all the time. So I then read this book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. So Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, and that's by a man named T. Harv Eker. Like the letter T, Harv, H-A-R-V, Eker. And that was the book that taught me about financial blueprint. And basically your financial blueprint, number one, what that says is we all have a money and success blueprint imprinted in our subconscious mind. So we have a money and success blueprint imprinted in our subconscious mind. That's what our financial blueprint is. And when I learned what mine was, it was, of course, I was creating all this financial mess in my life because that's what my blueprint was set for. And I realized at that point that if I didn't change my financial blueprint, things in my life were not going to change financially. I could keep trying things externally in my business, but nothing was going to change that. So the blueprint, this blueprint that you have more than anything else will determine your financial success. That's what I had to wrap my head around when I learned this. I realized that you can know everything about marketing, recruiting, sales, your products, but if and you can be an incredibly passionate person and you can love your business and love your opportunity, but if your blueprint is not set for a high enough level of success, then you will never attain that success. And if your financial blueprint isn't set high enough for a high level of money, then you will never attain that money. And here's the kicker. This is what's really interesting. Even if somehow you do make a lot of money at some point in your business, you will tend to sabotage yourself. And then it'll take you right back down to your financial set point. So everybody has a financial set point. You can think of it like a thermostat. So let's say we set the thermostat in a room for 70 degrees. If we open the door and it's hot outside and hot air rushes into the room and sets the thermostat or sets the temperature up to 80, the thermostat's going to kick on and the cool air is going to blow to bring it back down to 70 degrees, right? And same thing happens. If the room gets too cool, the heat's going to kick on and bring the room temperature back up to 70 degrees. But that 70 degrees is the set point. Well, just like that, we all have a financial set point imprinted in our subconscious minds. And your set point might be, for $100,000. And that seems to be what you earn no matter what you do. If you have a job, if you have a business, you seem to always end up around that, average. You might have a set point that's set for $25,000. So no matter what you do, that seems to be the opportunities that show up for you. Some people have a fantastic financial blueprint. Donald Trump has a multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar financial set point. However, he got programmed in his childhood. Even $1 million wasn't enough for him. He has $1 million. He thinks he's broke. He has $1 billion, and that's where his financial set point is. So it's interesting to watch people like lottery winners. This will sort of kind of drive home this point, is that we all have this set point. Lottery winners, the vast majority of them will, win large sums of money. And the statistics show that within 5 years, most of them have blown all the money that they won and are in worse financial condition than they are when they started or when they won the lottery. So imagine that. You win $100 million, and most of us can't even fathom that kind of money, or you win $5 million or whatever the number is, and 5 years from now, it is a better than average chance that you would be, that money would be gone and you'd be in a worse financial situation than you are now. Now, like I said, most people can't fathom that. They say, no way, I'd invest it, I'd be responsible, I'd do this, I'd do that. If you're not managing the money you have now, you would not manage that $1 million or that $10 million because you manage from your financial blueprint. And so if you aren't set to manage money, if you mismanage money or you can't hold on to money, then no matter what the amount is that you are given, without changing your financial blueprint, you wouldn't change how you actually interact or relate to money. I know it's hard to believe, but it's the only thing that explains that phenomena. How somebody can, even, you know, superstars, we see like MC Hammer, you know, he came on the scene, or Vanilla Ice, they come on the scene, they make millions, and within a few short years, their money's gone. It's because they never learned how to relate to money and how to manage money. So here's one thing that I can say that's actually good about this. It's sort of like the universe doesn't want to give you money that you can't handle, because you can create some serious disasters with a lot of money. So you need to learn how to manage what you have in order for you to get more. Okay, so for me to learn how to manage the $30,000 that I did make would allow the doors open for me to actually accumulate more. And that is explained in a lot of detail in the Secrets of the Millionaire Mind book. So I would encourage you to get that. So here's the thing, though, about financial blueprint. And this is number two. Unfortunately, your current financial blueprint will stay with you for the rest of your life unless you identify it and you change it. So you have to identify it and change it. So think of it like this. Think of like a metal, like let's say a muffin tin. You're going to bake some muffins. So you've got this muffin tin, and it's got all the molds for the muffins. If you were to take a hammer and you were to, you know, bang on that muffin tin until one of those molds was dented, okay, then you go bake muffins in that tin. Every time a muffin comes out of that one that's been dented by the hammer, what is the muffin going to have in it? The muffin's going to have a dent in it. Well, that's the same way with our financial blueprint. We're imprinted, or we're dented, if you will, in childhood, these beliefs that we're given around money, and then everything we produce from that point on in our life is going to match that dent. So the only way to fix it is to, you know, find the dent where it is and bang it out of the mold. You have to start like at the roots, okay? So when I first learned financial blueprint, my family, you know, basically they said, you know, your family leaves a financial legacy and you live from that legacy. Well, my family, I had just had three family members in the previous 2 years go through bankruptcy. So here I'm looking at $60,000 in debt. My business was bringing in maybe close to $30,000 at that point. So my debt to income ratio was, my debt was double what I was bringing in. I went and talked to a financial person, and they said, you need to declare bankruptcy. Like, you're a candidate for bankruptcy. Well, because of my family's history and me learning about this, I said, wait a second. I don't want to repeat the same mistakes of my family. And if I just declare bankruptcy and it wipes away my debt, I've seen what happened. My sister went through bankruptcy. Debt got wiped away within 2 years. I didn't even think you could get credit. Within 2 years, she was back in debt again. So it didn't fix her financial blueprint just because she erased all her mistakes through bankruptcy. So I knew at that point that even if I declared bankruptcy and started from zero, like started from a clear slate or clean slate, I was bound to recreate the same situation because I had not yet changed my blueprint. So at that point, I put a stake in the ground and I said, no, I'm going to do something different. I am going to learn everything I can about this financial blueprint and relationships to money and how wealthy people think versus how poor people think. And I am not going to declare bankruptcy. I said, I got myself into this. I'm going to get myself out of it. And I am almost completely debt-free today. I do have one small credit card with a very low interest rate, with a little bit of, credit on it. But that's it. I mean, that's it. So I went from $60,000 in debt, and I think within 4 years, I wiped away almost all of my debt. So the viewpoint I took was, it took me 3 years to create that debt. It'll take me 4 years to clean it up. I'm okay with that. So I just did payment plans, and, you know, had really, and, you know, settled some credit cards and things like that. If you want to talk to me about how I did it, like the ins and outs, what I would do is book a one-on-one session with me, and I'll give you the strategy that I use. But just know that it came down to a decision that I wasn't going to repeat the mistakes of my family. Okay, so now we know that we need to identify and change our blueprint. And that's what the rest of this call is going to be about, how to do that. So if you want to know how to identify your money blueprint, and you want to know what it's set for, number three, it says just look at your results. So if you were sitting there through this intro and trying to determine, well, what's my blueprint, just look at your tangible results. Look at the money that's in your bank account. Look at your debt-to-income ratio. Again, that's what I looked at, knew that I was, you know, heading for bankruptcy. Look at your income. Is it consistent or inconsistent? Because inconsistent income, that roller coaster ride, the up-down, up-down, is really just your subconscious mind's way of bringing you back to your financial set point. So if your average, let's say, is $5,000 in production a month, and all of a sudden something happens, a big promotion or, you know, just a lot of things come together and you make $10,000 in 1 month, typically what will happen is the following month will be $2,000. And what's that average? That average is around 6,000, which is close to your set point. So we see that happen a lot, that roller coaster ride of income. Look at how easily money comes to you. Does money come easily, or is it a struggle? Does money flow in your life and flow out of your life in a kind of a, you know, a smooth way, or is it always the result of working hard? So all these results will tell you what your financial blueprint is set for. So how did your financial blueprint get created? Well, I gave you a little bit of a clue by saying, you know, it happens in childhood. That's where our subconscious is programmed. It's really childhood influences. So that's the answer to number four. Your financial blueprint got created by childhood influences. So that means everybody who influenced you, your parents are usually the, you know, some of the biggest influences. Followed by siblings and other family members. And typically, if you have older siblings, sometimes your older siblings are even more of an influence in your life when you're young than your parents are. Because that older sibling actually acts as like a buffer between you and your parents. If you're the oldest child or you're an only child, your parents are probably your main influence because there weren't any siblings as the buffer. Childhood influences also include teachers. Teachers can have a really profound impact on your beliefs, and religious leaders. I know for me growing up, obviously my family's religion had a huge impact on my belief about money, and you know the bad influence that money can have in your life. So what you have to remember is that in the first 7 years of our life, our conscious mind is not fully developed. And so most messages we get in the first 7 years of our life go right into our subconscious and create our beliefs. And then we live from those beliefs for the rest of our lives. There are things we believe that we believe only because someone told us at a very young age that they're true. Dogs are dangerous. Men can't be trusted. Money is the root of all evil. Those are the types of things that we hear repetitively as children, and we don't have a filter that says, well, that's not true. You don't have a five-year-old reject the belief of their parents. They just absorb it. So that's the things to look at. That's the kind of things we want to take a look at on this call, because there's three main ways that we're programmed around money. So this is on the next page, and it's question number five. We are conditioned or programmed around money in three primary ways. And the three ways are verbal programming. So verbal programming. So that's what did you hear about money when you were young? What did you hear? The second way is modeling. Modeling means what did you see about money when you were young? What did you see? So I'll give you an example. When I was young, the television show Dynasty in Dallas were on. And so, you know, back in the 80s, what that showed me was that rich people are kind of crazy. I mean, they have these amazing, lavish, houses and mansions and yachts, but they get shot in the shower. You know, who shot JR? I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're taught about money as young people by modeling the things that we see. And the last one there is specific incidents. So specific incidents that either you are involved in So it's sort of like, what did you experience when you were young around money? I remember one woman's experience was that the first time she was given money to go to the store to buy something, she lost the money. She got to the store and she didn't have it. Well, that's her first big memory and impression around money, is that she couldn't, she wasn't responsible. If her mother gave her money, she would lose it. And she lived from that the rest of her life, well, until she learned the financial blueprint concept. So what are the specific incidents that you've experienced around money? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about verbal programming. I'm going to give you some examples. So verbal programming includes you hearing things like this, and we're on number 6. Money is the blank of all blank. So I already quoted it. Money is the root of all evil. Some people heard that. Be there. Rich people are blank. And you can write in whatever you heard or whatever you may have heard. Rich people are selfish. Rich people are greedy. Rich people are manipulative. Rich people are dishonest. Anything that you were told about rich people, go ahead and write that down. See, the third one there, money doesn't grow on, and I heard this all the time as a kid, money doesn't grow on trees. What do I look like, Rockefeller? I heard that as well. Money doesn't grow on trees. What am I, Rockefeller? D, money can't buy you love, or money can't buy you happiness. E, you can't be rich and spiritual. You can't be rich and spiritual. Those are contradictory in the way I was raised. F, tell me how many of you heard this. The rich get blank and poor get blank. So the rich get richer and the poor get poorer was what I used to hear. And then the last one there, what am I, made of money? I used to hear that one too. So those are all the kinds of things that we hear as kids, and we hear them repetitively. And that's one of the ways our subconscious gets programmed, is by hearing something over and over and over again. Repetition programs our subconscious. So the more you heard these types of things, the more those created beliefs for you in your subconscious mind. Okay, so now let's talk about modeling. So how are the things that you see as children? How does that create your financial blueprint? Well, we know that old adage, children don't do what we say, children do what we do, right? They don't do what we say. If we say don't smoke, don't smoke, don't smoke, but we smoke, our children are much more likely to smoke. They're not going to hear what we say, they're going to see what we do. So ask yourself, how did your parents and guardians handle money? So I'm going to give you some options, and you can just circle one of these in each line. And it could be both. You can have parents that have very different, you know, views around money and the different ways they acted around money. So it might be one parent acted one way and one parent acted another. But did your parents manage or mismanage money? Were your parents spenders or savers? And like I said, you might have had one parent, of each. Was money a struggle, or was it there in abundance? In other words, was it talked about in a scarcity way or with abundance? Was money a source of joy, and did it bring your family, you know, pleasurable experiences, or was it a source of bitter argument? And then, do you remember if your parents were investors, or were they money avoiders? Meaning, you know, they invested money, or the bills just kind of piled up in the corner and became a crisis. So just give a little bit of time to think about how it was that they related to money, and here's why. On the next page, page 4, says we tend to be exactly like one parent or a combination of both. So we take characteristics from both of them. Or we tend to be the opposite of our parents, the exact opposite. So I know that sounds funny, but you really can be any combination. You can be just like one parent, a combination of both of them, or reject their way of dealing with money or their viewpoint of money and create a completely counter way of dealing with money. So we've all heard the story about the rich kid, the kid that was born into a really wealthy family, And because he didn't like what he saw, or he didn't like what it manifested, he rejected the money and went and lived like a pauper, you know, much to the disappointment of his parents. We've also seen the opposite true, and Chris is the example of the opposite. Chris grew up in extreme poverty. His mother was on welfare. His mother was a single mom, and it was him and his brother and his little sister. And they were poor, and Chris remembers going to the store and how embarrassing it was to have food stamps for him. And he used to not want people to know where he lived because their house was so run down. He would have people that would drop him off down the block to hide where he lived. Now, Chris grew up with this determination to not live like his mother, to not be poor, to not be on, you know, welfare. And so that drove him very early on in his career to make a lot of money. But here's the problem with that. So you're accumulating money and you would think, well, that must make you happy because now you're not living the way your parents or your family live. It didn't make him happy because what was running him was rebellion against the way he was raised, which usually is just fueled by anger and resentment. So a lot of times you can actually create financial success for yourself, but if it's coming from this anger or this resentment of the way you were raised, it's not going to make you happy either. Matter of fact, the more you accumulate the money, the angrier you'll find yourself becoming. So this is all awareness of where your financial blueprint got created. So what I'd like you to do right now is I'd like to give you a few minutes to just write down an early childhood memory around money. Okay, so like we're going to talk about specific incidents now, something you actually experienced. I want you just to take a couple minutes to write down an early childhood memory about money. The more emotional, the better. Okay, so if it joy or, you know, probably a negative emotion will, because unfortunately negative emotions tend to imprint our subconscious stronger, I know it's unfortunate, than positive. So if you can think of a negative emotion around money or a negative experience, it's probably going to be helpful for this exercise. So go ahead and take a minute to do that now. And also write as much detail as you can remember. Okay, if you've come up with an incident and you're writing about it, you can go on to 9B. How may this experience have affected your current financial life? So look for any parallels between this early childhood experience and how you relate to or how you view money now. And I'll give you an example from my own life that kind of showed up for me. One of my early childhood memories around money is when I was around 5 years old, at least this is as early as I remember it, Skippy, the ice cream truck, would come into the neighborhood. And for a kid, to hear that bell ring, it's like Pavlov's dog. You know, you hear the bell, you start salivating because you know it means ice cream. And everybody would, you know, get money from their parents and run out to this ice cream truck. Well, my mother was very frugal. And most of the time, when I asked her for money for the ice cream truck, I would get an answer like, I could buy a half gallon of ice cream at the store for what you're going to pay for a snow cone, you know, or what you're going to pay for a Nutty Buddy bar or whatever it is. And it was just this crushing feeling. I remember as a 5-year-old, the disappointment I would feel because I didn't get to go run out to the ice cream truck with all my friends. It was more about the experience, right, and the camaraderie and the fun than it was about the ice cream. But my mother had a very practical and a very frugal approach. Now, a few times I got to have ice cream because my dad was home, you know, and he was more the spender, so he'd give us the dollar or whatever it was, and we'd run to the truck. But I remember really those times where I couldn't go and just this really, like, awful disappointment and this just feeling of, you know, I wasn't really angry because it was almost like I knew my mom was right and it was logical, but I just remember the disappointment. So how does it translate into my adulthood? Well, for years and years, as I struggled with money, I felt like I could never get what I really wanted. You know, like I would go shopping and I'd have some money to spend and I'd end up getting the thing that wasn't quite good enough, wasn't quite right, wasn't really what I wanted. And I had a real hard time splurging and really spending money on something. And even when I got money, believe it or not, it was still hard for me to spend money on myself because I think I just had this feeling of I can't really get what I want. I can't really get what I want. That was kind of what was programmed. So if you need more time to do this exercise, I just want to move on to make sure we get through all the content tonight. Go ahead and write down a couple money memories because you may find that, you know, you've got 2 or 3 memories that really stick out, and you'll find out and see the parallels of where they play out in your life now. Okay. So moving on to number 10. So now that we're aware of our financial blueprint, we know what it is, we know how it got programmed in our subconscious mind, we have to look at that's where we have to go in order to change our financial blueprint. So it requires 3 things to change it. It requires awareness, it requires understanding, and it requires reprogramming. So awareness, understanding, and reprogramming. So the awareness piece comes in understanding and recognizing that all your financial results come from your blueprint. Okay, so that's the first piece of awareness. That's a big aha for people. Like I've had people after this call in other programs call me and say, or you know, email me and say, I've never heard a financial blueprint before. What a concept. It explains everything that I've been dealing with around finances. You know, it's kind of like this huge aha moment. What I also want you to become aware of is where does it show up in your life? So where does this, you know, financial blueprint that you have, the set point, show up in your life? It shows up really often in how many times we say, I can't afford it. I can't afford it. Every time you speak those words or every time you think that thought, I can't afford it, or even things like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? You know, like you see somebody who's got success or they've purchased a beautiful home or something like that, and you kind of get that, well, that would be nice. You know, like that'll never, essentially you're saying, well, that'll never happen for me. Every time you speak those words or think those thoughts, you're conveying your financial blueprint. So I want you to start becoming aware of that because I realized so clearly in the last year or two through the coaching that Chris and I get in our business how my scarcity thinking shows up. We make good money. We're making a really good living in our business. We're teaching our clients to do the same thing. And yet I'll still go into a fine restaurant and I will scan the prices on the menu when I'm choosing my entree. I mean, that is ridiculous that we have the money. I could have the, I don't know, what's the most expensive thing on the menu? I can have the filet and the lobster. You know what I mean? But I'm still scanning the prices and making my decisions from that. That, our coach just says, that's crazy. So you have to start looking at all those little decisions you make based solely on money. And the reason you have to start becoming aware of that is because that is telling you what your blueprint is set for, and I'm going to start giving you steps to change that. Okay, so that's the awareness piece. The understanding piece, and you can turn the page, because we have a little bit of explanation to do on the understanding. The understanding is number 11 where it says it's the roots create the fruits. So I have a little picture diagram there of an apple tree. And you see the roots in the ground. So the understanding is understanding the impact that this has on your life, where it comes from, the impact it has in your life, and then the how to change it. And really, when we say the roots create the fruits, this is the illustration we want you to understand. The fruits of a tree are like your conscious mind, or it's what's visible, okay? The roots are the subconscious mind and what's invisible. But the invisible and the subconscious always create the visible, okay? So if there's fruit on a tree, if there's a tree and a branch, there are roots in the ground. So if you want to change what's visible, if you look around and you say, I don't like my financial results, I don't like where my business is at right now, and you go and you start making changes only externally, so only in the visible world. Let's say you change, you know, your software system, or you create a newsletter for your business, or you change, you know, how you're recruiting or something like that. But you haven't stopped to change the root, then your change is going to be very temporary. So it's like you have an apple tree and you say, I don't want apples anymore. I really want oranges. And you go and you chop off all the apples, and the next season you wait for oranges to grow, you're going to be very disappointed. You have to change it at the root. Understanding that is key. Change begins in the subconscious mind. It doesn't mean you can't make changes in your external business. Chris and I always recommend that you support both, that you change the subconscious programming as well as change the external things. But you have to understand that it all starts in the subconscious or in those roots that are in the ground. So you have to change the roots first. So here's how we go about doing that. So number 12 says, to reprogram your subconscious mind around money, you must use a four-part process, okay? So subconscious reprogramming sounds kind of deep, okay? But what I want you to realize is your subconscious gets programmed anyways. It's been programmed your whole life. It continues to get programmed every day by the things that you're surrounded by, the things you hear, the things that you believe, the beliefs that get reinforced. So it's being programmed anyways. Whether it's serving you or not, that's when you look at the fruits. What are the fruits that are being created in your life? If it's not serving you, then you have to get intentional about reprogramming your subconscious mind. Okay? So here's the four-part process that it takes. The first M there stands for meditation. So meditation, I know it sounds really woo-woo when you first hear it, like, oh my gosh, she's not going to tell me to sit in a corner of a room, cross my legs, hold my finger and thumb together and hum, you know, and do Well, I used to think it was really silly. Matter of fact, not only did I think it was silly, I was actually taught that it was dangerous to meditate in the belief system that I was raised in. They didn't want you clearing your mind. But what I have since learned about meditation is yes, even though it has, you know, some spiritual connotations to it, the main thing meditation does for you is it trains your brain to focus. And if you're as scattered as a lot of people are, you know that your brain is constantly bouncing from thing to thing, topic to topic, to-do list to do list, and you're never really experiencing clear focus. And people tell me all the time they're ADD. I don't know if they've really been diagnosed as it, as it's just that they have had such overwhelming stimulus, you know, for so long with technology and just the way our world works now, that they can't get their brain to focus. So that's one of the main things that meditation does. It calms you down, it slows you down, and it trains your brain to focus. The other thing it allows you to do is as you focus, you quiet your conscious mind. The reason that's important is because you can't hear your subconscious when your conscious mind is a chatty Cathy doll. Okay, so meditation allows you to tap into your subconscious. I'm going to tell you how this happens, and it happens naturally whether you ever try to meditate or not. When you're falling asleep at night, do you know how, like, all of a sudden you'll be starting to drift off and you'll be like, oh, wait a second, I forgot to send that email to so-and-so? Or, you know, when you're driving down the street and you're just kind of, you kind of get lost in your thinking, and all of a sudden you go, oh, I forgot to call so-and-so, or I got to cancel that appointment. The reason at the, or you're in the shower, or you're taking a walk, or you're waking up in the morning, and all of a sudden you have this clarity and this reminder, you know, like all of a sudden, that is because your conscious mind in those moments has quieted down. So in the shower, driving a car, falling asleep, you go into a meditative state before you go unconscious. And I know it's hard to, it's scary to think that you're actually unconscious when you're driving, but there is this meditative state that you go into. It happens when you're watching television at times. And it allows your subconscious or your conscious mind to relax and your subconscious to bring things up. That's why you remember things at those times. Meditation can do that for you. You quiet your conscious mind, and you bring, and your subconscious mind can then start to bring all its, you know, memory, its wisdom, and those things to you. There's different ways to do meditation. I find it very difficult to just sit and just try and focus on something and quiet my mind. So I tend to use things like yoga, deep breathing, where you just focus on your breathing. There's also meditation music, like you can get CDs and things like that. I have hypnotherapy CDs, which are fantastic. It's just like a guided, you know, kind of like a guided meditation. And there's also people that will do it for you. Once I had one of the most powerful meditation sessions because somebody was actually talking us through the process rather than just trying to do it on my own. But okay, so that's just the first step. The second step is visualization. Now, this is where a lot of people go wrong. Not because they don't understand visualization or not because they don't believe in the power of visualization. It's just they don't do it accurately, okay? So here's what it takes to do visualization correctly. Number one, it takes clarity, meaning you have to see the same images day after day after day, okay? So sometimes people get focused and they're like, this is what I really want. I want the Mustang. I want the black Mustang by June. And they stay focused on it. But a lot of times we jump around and we hop around from image to image. You really have to get focused. You have to get really clear about what, exactly what you want and then visualize that image day after day. The second thing is, and this is a big one that was missing for me, is emotion. We have to bring emotion to our visualization, okay? Now remember, there's two primary ways the subconscious gets programmed in the first place. Through emotion and repetition, okay? So that's how you got programmed as a child. You either had an emotional experience, which is why I said try and think of a money memory that's emotional for you, or you had something repeated to you over and over and over again, and that's how your brain gets imprinted. If I say September 11th, you immediately have this reaction or this emotion attached to it. If I say, where were you on September 11th, you can tell me. You'll remember exactly where you were. If I say, tell me where you were October 12th of that same year, you'd be like, unless it's your birthday or something special like that, you say, I don't have a clue where I was. But we all remember where we were on September 11th. And the reason is that was a very profound emotional experience for us. And it creates an immediate link in your subconscious to the word September 11th. So when you visualize, just to think of something actually isn't that powerful. Just to do the visualization isn't powerful. What's powerful is when you link the visualization to emotion, when you have some feeling come up, if you get teary-eyed when you think of your visualization, if you smile as you're thinking of your, you know, your goal or your image or whatever it is you want to attain, if you get goosebumps, those are all physical signs that you've been moved. And that emotion is what actually brings you closer to that vision. Now, how do you, so let's say you're trying to visualize, let's say you want to walk across the stage at seminar and become a director. How do you, and let's say you visualize it quite frequently, but it doesn't seem to move you emotionally, okay? The way you can attach emotion to that is think of the last time you accomplished something amazing that made you feel great. So think of an accomplishment of yours, the last time you reached a really big goal or you got recognized for something, and remember the emotion attached to it. And as soon as you feel the emotion, switch quickly and think of yourself walking across the stage at seminar. Because your brain, what happens is it'll register the emotion of the previous event and it'll attach it to the visualization in the future. And the great thing is your brain doesn't know the difference between a past event and a future visualized event. And you want to make that neural link. Okay, so the second way, or you know, the third way to do the visualization, we've got clarity, emotion, is repetition. So I find that the biggest mistake people make in visualization is they don't do it frequently enough, they don't do it consistently enough. You actually have to see the same vision with emotion for 30 days without stopping. Now, I can tell you that myself personally, it is a rare if ever I've been able to visualize like that for 30 days straight. But let me tell you what will happen if you do. There was this experiment that was done years ago with NASA astronauts. What they decided they wanted to do was, in order to get the astronauts acclimated to the zero gravity they were going to feel in space, like the disorientation that goes with it, they put goggles on them that they had to wear 24/7 that reversed the image that they saw. So it inverted the world. So instead of the ceiling being up, the ceiling was down and the floor was up. So everything was reversed in their vision. Well, you can imagine how disoriented this was for them at first. So they're bumping into things, they're getting nauseous, they've got headaches, they've got all those, you know, things that they're going to experience when they go into space. So the experiment's working. So then they started to adjust, though. After a while, the disorientation goes away, the nausea goes away, and they start to become, you know, functional. They can actually start to function with the image flipped upside down. Here is the most fascinating thing that happened. Between days 24 and 28, every one of their visions got flipped back right side up. So their brain rewired itself after 24 to 28 days to see the vision correctly, even though the goggles were still flipping the image. So what that told them, and there's a reason when you hear it takes 21 days to, you know, make or break a habit, there's a reason there's that common knowledge, because it takes your brain that long to create a new neural connection. And that's exactly what happened to these astronauts, who after seeing the image flipped upside down, their brain rated it. But here's what's fascinating. If they took the goggles off any point in, let's say, day 0 to 24, the image would not flip itself back up unless they wore it for another 24 days. So it always took 24 days to get that response from their brain. You couldn't take the goggles off on day 12 and then expect it day 24 for the image to flip. If you took it off at day 12 and you put the goggles back on, it would take you a full 24 days to 28 days before the image would right itself again. So that means when we do this visualization thing, which a lot of us do, but we don't do it consistently, we don't do it 24 to 28 or 30 days in a row, we're starting from scratch every time we stop and then we start again. So that stop and start in visualization is what keeps it from not working. When Chris and I attended a conference once with Jack Canfield, it was one of Jack Canfield's conferences, he had written a book called The Success Principles. And I think in the success principles are 62 or 64 of his principles that he thinks are critical for success. That's a lot of principles, 64 of them, almost too many in my opinion. But toward the end of his conference, somebody asked him if he could pick one of those principles that he thought more than any other was responsible for his success. By the way, Jack Canfield is the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul and a multimillionaire motivational speaker and coach and trainer. And what did he say was the one that, you know, was more responsible than the others? And at first he said, I don't think I can pick one because, you know, they're all really important. I've applied them all. And then all of a sudden he goes, wait a second. He goes, I think I can pick one. He said, consistent visualization. He said, every morning when my feet hit the floor, I am having the same visualization for my life, for what it is I want in my life. And Chris and I were like, wow. I was like really blown away that he picked that one, that visualization, as being the thing that he thinks he contributes his success to. So that's how important it is. Okay, let's go on to the next one. So affirmations is the third one. So affirmations sometimes kind of get poked at, you know, kind of get made fun of. And again, I think it's partly because just people have been doing it wrong, or they haven't been doing it frequently enough, or they haven't been doing it for the right reasons. So affirmations are really, again, I think it's just to focus you. You have self-talk, negative self-talk that happens all day long. If you can start to become in that program, and that, what does that do? It's coming from your subconscious, and then it just keeps reinforcing what's in your subconscious. If you can recognize that, become aware of it, catch yourself in the moment when you're doing it, when you're berating yourself or making yourself wrong, and then switch it to a positive affirmation, that continues the reprogramming process. So we've all heard the, you know, make sure your affirmations are bold, clear, positive, in the present tense, etc. But I want to tell you that when you come up with an affirmation and you start to say it, sometimes you feel a little silly. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to feel silly when you're doing it, because quite frankly, you're retraining your brain. And that does feel odd at times. So, and it, the affirmations, it doesn't matter if you do it silently or out loud. But one thing I will recommend, just try this. Try doing your affirmations in front of a mirror, okay? The reason, and again, it'll be very uncomfortable for you to look yourself in the eyes in your mirror. Sometimes you can't even look at yourself and say your affirmations. So for a while, it'll be uncomfortable. It'll be hard to look at yourself. But then eventually, it becomes comfortable. And it's almost like a much more powerful affirmation when you're saying it to yourself in the mirror. So back when I was struggling in my business, and like I said, I was struggling right around the $30,000 mark, I started seeing an affirmation that was, well, there were two ones that I had. I had one that I said, money comes easily and frequently from expected and unexpected sources. Money comes easily and frequently from expected and unexpected sources. I chanted that, like I said it like a mantra all day long. The other thing I said was, I am capable and worthy of generating at least $5,000 a day. I am capable and worthy of generating at least, I'm sorry, $5,000 a day. Sorry about that. $5,000 a month at the time I was making 30. So can you see how my financial blueprint has changed? I just realized that. Wow, that rolled off my tongue really easy for a day. That's a great, great goal. So I was saying, I'm capable and worthy of generating at least $5,000 per month. And I said that every day, that and along with the other one, that money comes from expected and unexpected sources easily and frequently. And I tell you, within a couple months, now it took a couple months, I'm not going to lie, it didn't happen magically overnight, but within a couple months of that repetition, and I had it posted on my board in front of me in my office, I started to consistently make $5,000 in my business. That was the year that I think I made $72,000. And the following year, I finally broke six figures. And I'm not going to say it was just the mantra, the affirmation, because that wouldn't be true. There were other things I was doing as well. But it was amazing how easily $5,000 started coming to me. And it was also amazing the times that it was so unexpected. Like, I didn't see where it was going to come from that month, but I stayed in faith and I kept saying it over and over again. And I would get a call out of the blue from a referral, from a client, from a past client. And it was just, I started to build the faith that the money is there. The money had always been there, but I had this subconscious block to it. So affirmations, it's just my opinion, but I believe that they work. So find a short, succinct affirmation or borrow mine if you like the ones that I was using. Feel free to use those. The last one there, so the last part of this four-part process is the part that I think when people are talking about things like meditation, visualization, affirmation, that they really tend to leave out, and it's action. So when people started teaching the law of attraction, I loved it. I absolutely believe in the law of attraction. But I think it's so funny that the word action is in the word attraction, and it was a piece that really got overlooked a lot. So action is the piece that people leave out of the law of attraction. So here's the quite simple thing. You can do the meditation. You can do the visualization with emotion for 30 days, and you can say your affirmations. But if you are not willing to get into action in support of these things that you want, you're fooling yourself. It's just a dream. So if you set a goal of, I want 500,000. I've really reprogrammed myself. That's so amazing. I have it written right in front of me, $5,000 in production. If you set a goal of $5,000 in production per month, and you do the meditation, the visualization, the affirmation, but you never pick up the phone, and you never go warm chatter, and you never have recruiting conversations, then it's just not going to happen. Those three don't work alone, okay? Now, on the flip side, action alone, without any meditation, without any visualization, or without affirmation, is really hard work. It's just like the grunt work without all these other things that could be working for you. Action plus the meditation, visualization, and affirmation, it makes success come so much easier. So that's why we recommend that four-part process. And to wrap up, I just want to share with you a formula that I had been taught years ago, and it's in the Secrets of the Millionaire Mind book. And it's CZ, this is the formula, CZ equals MZ. And what that stands for is your comfort zone equals your money zone. And so if the actions that you know that it takes to build your business are out of your comfort zone, that's exactly where the money is. And as you expand your comfort zone and you do the things that you're uncomfortable doing, that is how it will grow your money, and your financial blueprint and your money. Your comfort zone equals your money zone. So the resources I had mentioned throughout the call, I just want to make sure I give them to you one more time, and then I'm going to give you some homework. The resources were The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind book. I would highly recommend that book. The Science of Getting Rich, which is another book that was written years and years ago. The Science of Getting Rich is actually a book that the Secret was based on. It's the book that she found in the beginning that, like, totally blew her mind because she started to learn about the law of attraction. That book that she found was The Science of Getting Rich. And then, of course, Think and Grow Rich, which we talked about earlier. So here's what I'd like you to do for homework. One, finish up the exercise about early childhood memories if you didn't have enough time to finish that on the call. But what I'd like you to do is for 1 week, I'd like you to notice how much you let finances or your financial blueprint, which means, you know, scarcity and lack, control your choices. And it's very insidious. It dictates where we shop. It dictates where we eat. Like I said, we look at menus and we look at the prices rather than the entrees. You know, we buy something because it's on sale, not even because we need it, just because it's on sale. And scarcity mentality says, well, I might need this in a month, but I don't want to pay full price. Right? We do crazy things out of scarcity and lack mentality. But what you have to realize is this is how lack gets reinforced in your life. This is how you keep telling yourself that there's lack by living that way. You actually have to start before the money shows up. I know it sounds totally counterintuitive, but before the money shows up, you have to start to let the money flow. Okay, so if that means you're looking at two types of cheese in the dairy section, and one is a little bit nicer cheese and it's a little bit, you know, ritzier and more expensive, I want you to buy that cheese. I know it sounds very funny, but I actually went through that, where there's this amazing cheese that I would never let myself indulge in because it's like $11 a pound. Well, go buy that cheese. because you have to start acting as if there is abundance in the universe, because there is. But if you're always living from lack, then you end up reinforcing lack. So for 1 week, notice how much you let money control your choices and make a couple choices to expand yourself. Whether that's, like I said, buying the cheese or getting the entree you want rather than, you know, the one you don't want. Start to play with this. If you have any questions, feel free to email them. And if this topic has really resonated with you and you'd like to have a session with me around your financial blueprint and some of the things we've talked about, then feel free and go ahead and schedule that. Hope you've enjoyed the information. As you can tell, I get very passionate about it. I love this topic. I love teaching it. I love helping people with it. It's changed my life, and I do not say that lightly. My financial blueprint was affecting everything in my life, because without financial freedom, you cannot have time freedom. And without time freedom, you cannot have relationship freedom. And without relationship freedom, you can't have mission freedom. So that means that in order to live your mission and have the relationships you want and have the time that you need to devote to those things, you need financial freedom. So it's not money for the sake of money. Don't ever hear it like that. It is true. Money will not make you happy. But freedom, freedom will make you happy. So I hope this has been really helpful to everyone. I hope you all have a great night. Chris looks forward to being back with you in 2 weeks when the topic is overcoming procrastination. He's going to give you some great tools on how to overcome whatever is holding you back. And whatever you're procrastinating. So I hope you all have a great night, and we look forward to talking to you soon. Bye-bye.